Welcome to Garden DC, a podcast of Washington Gardener magazine all about gardening in the greater Washington, D.C. and Mid-Atlantic area. Your host is Kathy Gents, editor of Washington Gardener magazine. We're joined this episode by Abra Lee. Hey, Abra.
Hey, Kathy. How's it going?
Good. How about you?
I am doing well, hanging out in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania.
Lucky you. So you're actually living on the grounds of Longwood Gardens.
Yes, it's a house that Longwood owns. It's across the street. So yeah, you might as well say the grounds. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, I'm so envious. So is Longwood open to the public right now?
No, it is not. With regret, it's not open to the public due to the current circumstances with the world pandemic. But we have a very knowledgeable and committed social media staff that are doing posts from the garden to, I would say, try their best to cheer up the public and give them, you know, some springtime and Eastern Pennsylvania vibes.
I know I've been following along on the orchid class, the online orchid class, and that's been wonderful to have that resource online.
Oh, good. And,
yeah. So let's back up a little for our listeners and tell them how you got to Longwood. So first, let's talk about you got a degree in horticulture at Auburn University, correct?
Yep, I'm an Auburn Tiger, so War Eagle, if you got any Southern or diehard Auburn listeners.
Nice. So how did you end up there, and what made you get a degree in horticulture?
Okay, so I ended up in Longwood. I had visited Longwood 10 years prior to me joining this program, but I found out about the Fellows Program, which is a leadership in public horticulture program, on Twitter. I saw a tweet that Longwood put out about this amazing program, and they were going into their third year of a revamped program, and they were accepting applications. And I want to say that was in late summer of 2018. So that's how I found out about this program. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, see, Twitter is good for some things.
So it is. That was... people are,
I was like, I've made some great connections on social media, and especially Twitter. And you never know what you're going to find out there. So good for you.
That's
for
true.
Keeping an ear to the ground and stumbling across that program.
Well, thank you. That tweet did change my life. So I have to say that if I didn't get but one thing out of Twitter, it was that. So it was worth it for sure.
Great. And then tell everybody a little bit what is involved in the Longwood Fellows Program.
So what's involved is that it is a cohort of professionals. We all have different backgrounds. So I came into the Longwood Fellowship not from the background of public horticulture being at a botanical garden. I was in municipal horticulture. So I had been landscape manager at two international airports. I had been an extension agent with the University of Georgia. I had been a city arborist with the city of Atlanta. And there are also people that came from private gardens in our cohort. There are six of us this year, six women. And what it involves is learning leadership skills to help you go on and lead a public garden should you choose to be an executive director or CEO, or maybe you want to be director of horticulture, maybe you want to be director of education, that type of thing. We go through in the fall, the first half of the cohort, it's a one-year cohort. We start in June, so we started June 2019. So for the first 6 months, we went through a real intense series of classes. So everything from strategic leadership to the art of negotiation to a stylist, just understanding your colors, the right way to dress, to speaking, so just understanding how to lead through a variety of ways. And then the second part of that was what they call a field placement. So I was assigned to Chateau Villandry in France, and I arrived February 1st of this year, and I was set to be there for 8 weeks, and that was cut short due to the coronavirus. So I came back, and I'm back at Longwood now finishing up my final project for the fellowship.
Oh, wow. So it's a definitely a year-long commitment, and you're basically staying in Longwood except for your 8 weeks abroad. And it's fascinating to me that they go into such broad subjects as your style, how you speak, how you present yourself. That's wonderful that that's part of the all the, that is part of the program. I thought it was would totally 100% focus on horticulture. But it's great that they're grooming you for all aspects of leadership.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because for many of us, we have a horticulture background. So one of my the people in my program, Becky Paxson, her background is in fundraising. So that's a huge thing you need to know for the public garden world. So you definitely have the time and the opportunity to deep dive into plants should you want to. And there's a beautiful garden right behind me where I can continue to keep that study up. But for me, it was very valuable to learn these new skills, because I had a very good understanding of a southern plant palette from Georgia to Alabama and even in Southeast Texas. But I, even though I've been in leadership positions before at airports, this is leadership at a new level, and just understanding what it takes to, I would say, just lead a variety of people into a new future, and do it in a way that is exciting and engaging, and I think just needed for this industry.
Definitely. And it's, I'm so sorry to hear that your trip to France got cut short. Will there be any chance you think of making it up in the future?
Not through this program, but I would certainly go back. So Henri Carvalho, who is the great grandson of Joachim and Anne Carvalho, who started the gardens at Chateau Villandry, is who I worked for. And he was such a nice man. And I enjoyed my time there. I enjoyed the time with the staff. They truly are like a small family there. And right now, I won't be able to go back before the program ends, but I would certainly go back to visit him and also the family that hosted me. So the Cross family. So I have to go back to France. It was a really, really fun experience.
And I know that gardeners are the best people in the world and the nicest people. So
Yes.
those connections are always connections for a lifetime.
Truly, truly. Yeah, I truly miss them. And their garden is shut down as well. So I've been diligently following their Instagram feed and trying to relive my best French life.
Yeah, it's great that we're at least able to connect online and through social media and some videos and be able to see those gardens at their peak this spring, while many of us are shut in at home.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about gardening. So what is your passion? Like, what are your favorite plants? What do you love to grow?
So my favorite plants are trees, and I grew up in Atlanta during the week, and I didn't realize it until I would say well into my career. I knew I liked trees, but I didn't understand why I loved them, and I started thinking back of how I got into this industry. So when I was a little girl, my dad was director of parks for the city of Atlanta. So on the weekends, I would ride around with him, and he'd be checking on the parks. And I also grew up in a neighborhood called Adams Park in Atlanta, full of trees. There's a park across the street from my house, my mom and dad's house, and also a golf course, right? So on the weekends, we'd go down to my mom's hometown, which is Barnesville, Georgia, complete dirt road country. So where I was leaving these dogwoods and these oak trees and magnolias, down there is hickories and pecans and cedar trees. So I was always surrounded by trees. And that is truly my favorite part of horticulture. I also have a deep love for container gardening. And my mom, that's how she gardened when I was younger. She had these really big pots she set out and grew things in, whether it was tomatoes. I mean, she's grown peanuts, real peanuts in a pot. So I love that you can move them around, you can change it up, and it's just being able to have choices and options with a container garden. So those are my two favorite loves in horticulture.
Yeah, and containers are so versatile. So, and I love the fact that you can obviously mix, mingle, and they're movable.
Yes.
So I keep trying to get that through people's heads sometimes, is that, you pot up a plant, a tomato or something, and it's not getting enough sun, move it into the sun so it doesn't have to
Exactly.
stay exactly where it is. So, and you can buy them on wheels if you need to.
Yes.
So you grew up, obviously in a family that was very deep into plants and steeped into parks and outreach. So you were probably spending a lot of time outdoors as a family together. Did you have a particular memory of, say, a grandparent or anything that you were planting something together with?
I would just really say my memories of being in Barnesville with my great aunts and uncles, and it was a family farm. So them planting in the front yard, which was decorated with anything you can imagine, just any type of edging, rocks, bricks, an old piece of iron, just a very traditional Southern African American yard art style. So they did a lot of containers, planting celosia, planting what else? Putting out the zinnia seeds, planting food plants, so fruit and vegetable plants within that small garden space in the front yard. It was 27 acres, but there was just this really specific space in the front yard where they would plant anything decorative and anything with food. And it just was a very welcoming vibe. It was very bright, very vibrant, almost reminded you of a quilt. It wasn't in a particular order, but it didn't need to be. It was their own artistic expression. So that's my memories.
Oh, I love that. I love really intensive gardening. And it sounds like they used whatever they had at hand, and whatever inch of space was just chock full of color and full of plants.
So, oh yeah, absolutely. And their containers would have been old pots or wash pans, or, I mean, anything, an old crate, milk crate. They just were so, now we call that upcycling and shabby chic. And this is something that they always did. So
yep.
Those were such beautiful memories.
And those are my favorite kind of gardens, are upcycled and found, you know, inventive ways to use just what you have where you are, and to grow everything that you can at that point.
Yeah, they didn't waste a thing, and they made it just look so cool. So nice. Yeah, it was really nice.
So you are the owner, aside from the Longwood Fellowship, of Conquer the Soil. Tell us a little bit about Conquer the Soil.
Yeah, so Conquer the Soil started because I was really interested in the intersection of fashion and horticulture. I wasn't really crazy about the garden clothes, so I kind of started making my own on the side. And then it grew into me looking at magazines and pop culture. And I was noticing that I would discuss plants with my friends, and they still kind of really didn't get what I did as a horticulturist. And I said, you know, if I'm going to connect with these chicks, I need to make it through Beyonce or through, you know, Rihanna or something. So if I saw one of them posing in front of hydrangeas or a topiary, I would talk about the topiary. I wouldn't talk about the pop star. Mm-hmm. And that's how Conquer the Soil started. And then I also was really inspired by my mom, who is a retired educator, specifically a history teacher. And so when I was at Auburn, of course, I learned about Rosemary Vere and Frederick Law Olmsted, but I didn't learn about any Black African-American figures in horticulture. And it really made me wonder why. So I started studying that on my own and sharing that through Conquer the Soil. So it evolved from fashion to pop culture to history. And it's just this hodgepodge of things, but it allows me to express myself and tell horticultural stories in a way that connects with my audience. So it's been a lot of fun.
That sounds like definitely a lot of fun. So how did you come up with the name Conquer the Soil?
Yeah, so that name came from a book written by W.B. Du Bois, just one of the most famous American intellects, a Black man. And it was in this book called The Soul of Black Folk. And he talked about the Africans' ability, their gift of story, song, and their ability to conquer the soil. And when he said that, I was like, that's going to be the name of my company. So it's really meaningful to me. Yeah.
Nice. I love it when you come across a phrase in a gardening book and it just rings so true for your soul.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like literally it lifted off the page. It's like neon lights. Like, this is it. I knew it.
A lot of your friends, are they into gardening?
One of my really good friends, one of my best friends is, her name is Alana, and she's a cardiologist. She's really into gardening. I would say specifically roses, flowers, any type of decorative gardening. My other friends are It just depends. I mean, some of them are, some of them aren't. I think that they're just starting to learn more about it. And it's really been more of a career type thing for me. It hasn't been me teaching people how to garden as much as it's been me working in the landscape industry and working in the beautification industry. So just maintaining or creating beautiful public spaces is what I've really spent most of my time doing.
And that's so important. And we're finding that out, especially now when we're not, you know, kind of shut in the house, but a lot of our local states, parks, county parks, city parks are our little refuge now that we can get away with and have some, you know, solace for the soul.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does matter now more than ever. And I'm thankful that I've been in this career. I mean, like as you have been in this field, and it's so wonderful to be in it because I get to be outside for a living, which is a pretty cool job. You know, I get paid to be out in fresh air and see nice things. So I'm grateful, and it's definitely helping me to cope right now.
Yeah. So I was going to rewind a little bit and say, I think where we originally met was a few years ago for the Garden Writers Association, which is now called GardenCom, the Association for Garden Communicators, at their annual meeting when it took place in Atlanta a few years ago.
Chicago, that's where
we met. Chicago. Yeah. Yep. So it was in Chicago. And I think the couple of years before we had been in Atlanta, but somehow we just missed each other at that point.
Right. I don't know how I didn't go to that one in Atlanta, yeah. But I was in Chicago and I had a blast.
Yeah. So this coming summer, hopefully, if everything goes okay, we will be in August at Williamsburg, Virginia. And are you involved on the planning committee for that?
I'll say this, I have been the worst person on the planning committee. Everybody else has done a wonderful job. But one job I did, which was really good, is that I brought up the idea to the group and threw the name. You know how you throw a name in the hat of who a good speaker would be? And the name I put out there was Sean Spencer Hester, who is the granddaughter of Ann Spencer, the Ann Spencer Garden and Museum in Lynchburg, Virginia. And Sean is going to be the keynote speaker. So the reason I have not, GardenCom committee, please forgive me, been as engaged is because Longwood has put a lot of work on me this year. But we are so fortunate to have her as a speaker. And that was my one contribution. So it's going to be amazing.
I'm so looking forward to that. And I'm actually going to interview Sean Hester for the On the QT, the GardenCom newsletter. So I'm looking forward to getting to know her a little more. And I've never been to the Ann Spencer Museum in Lynchburg. So that's going to be a treat as well.
Yeah, that'll be exciting for all of us to go. She's such a nice woman. And you're going to learn so much about her grandmother, the history, her grandfather. It's really, I know we use the word amazing a lot, but it really is something it's going to make your jaw drop. I'm telling you.
I'm definitely looking forward to that. So Conquer the Soil, we'll circle back to that for a second and just say, how can people contact you to find out more?
Oh, okay. Well, they can follow me on social media at Conquer the Soil on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I got to tell you, I'm an Instagram kind of girl. So that's my favorite place to engage. The other two, I just kind of show up. And you can also go to my website, email me, Abra, A-B as in boy, R-A, at conquerthesoil.com. And you can reach out to me that way. I love to talk to people. I love when people drop a hint of a cool story, something I can talk about. So I'm pretty reachable for sure.
So it's Conquer the Soil, all one word, no spaces, for Instagram, correct?
That is correct.
And we follow each other on Instagram and other social media. And what are your favorite posts that you put up and that you see from other people? What really interests you?
Okay, so the favorite post I put up are definitely the Black History posts, because these are things that a lot of people just aren't aware of. And it's not that it's just Black history, it's American garden history. And when people hear it for the first time, so I'll give you an example. I put up the last post I think I put up that was a garden post was on the flower vendors of Washington, D.C. And I had read about these men and women, mostly women, and I didn't know what they ever looked like. And one of my friends, a fellow horticulturist, Wamboy Ippolito, who's up in New York in Staten Island, sent me a picture of them. She texted it to me. I think everybody thinks that she actually sent it to me. Mm-hmm. Long story short, Kathy, what we now call flower farmers, these are women, Black women, that grew plants in rural areas and brought them into D.C. and they brought them into Virginia and sold them in these flower markets. And they were in potted flowers, they were cut flowers, et cetera. But these are women that also never get credit for the work that they did and the path that they laid. So when people are able to know that even as a flower farmer, regardless of my race, regardless of how I identify, that the history, the start of this was the 1870s, these Black women, I think people are just really, really proud of that. And they see where they started and it gives them just, I think just some type of history to follow. And then it gives them a legacy to know that they follow a beautiful path of people that did work they were proud of.
And it's fascinating also to see that how it's circled back around and mm-hmm. how cut flower farming is such a big and growing industry, no pun intended, these mm-hmm. days, that so many people are looking at their, you know, maybe a small farm or they have a back field that maybe they can convert to cut flowers. And looking back at that heritage, it's so fascinating to see that coming back around now.
It is. It just shows you who you are. It shows you the humble roots, you know, that we all come from. And it just shows you, and these women are dressed beautifully. They have on their head wraps. They just look like flower queens for real.
I know.
And, go ahead.
I was going to say, I marked that post and I forwarded that to my brother who sells antique botanical prints and historic mm-hmm. prints. And he's sent me over the years, several prints of say New Orleans farmers markets and that sort of thing that I have framed around the house. And mm-hmm. I, as soon as I saw yours, I forwarded it to him and I said, do you have this print? and if you don't, look out for it and hold on to it for me. And unfortunately he doesn't yet, but I've got it on order. I'll say that as soon as he comes across that in a collection,
that's wonderful.
That's mine. I'll tell you that.
That's wonderful. And I'm glad to know, we know that it's out there and mm-hmm. these are stories that deserve to be told and uplifted. And we need to be able to talk about the DC flower vendors the same way we talk about Frederick Law Olmsted. And that's not to shade him or throw him under the bus. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying they're as equally important. So that is something that is a meaningful post. And those are the type of posts that mean the most to me. In terms of people, I recently started following their name. I'm going to butcher this because I am not a Spanish speaker, but it's Gothic Jardineras, Jardineras. Mm-hmm. And they'll post things like a picture and it'll say plant hallucinogens from across the world. And it'll be a beautiful picture. And it looks like a vintage indigenous print with flowers and mushrooms and leaves. And I just think it's so cool. And it's just their whole vibe that they're on. I love their skeleton Black plants, bright colors. I think they're in Arizona, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And they're just exciting to me because they're just who they are. It's like they're not looking for permission. They're like, this is what we do and vibe with it or not. So, I mean, and I'm not saying they even say that. It's just cool. I love their pictures. They're just very fresh to me and very bright.
And authentic self-expression.
For sure. Yeah. And their Instagram is GOTHJARDINERAS. So I just think I'm feeling them. And I even texted them. I was like, this is seriously one of my favorite Instagrams. And I probably started following them 2 weeks ago, but they, for whatever reason, they just give me energy in a way that many Instagram accounts don't. So mm-hmm. I'm into it.
Yeah. I love it when you can make that connection and that spark with somebody and just like, that's me. That's what I feel.
Yes. Yeah. I feel so seen on their account. I have no idea why, but keep it up.
Yeah. It sounds like they have really good energy around them. So, in your experience, what are the things that you feel like are what people are looking or gravitating to gardening now? So what are they reaching for? Are they reaching for a connection back to the land? Are they looking to eat more healthfully?
I think that from from my where I sit, I think it's a connection to the land. And I was reading something that I'm going to butcher her name too, but Dr. Gray Gundaker talked about. She is at, I believe, William and Mary. She's an anthropologist, and she's done a lot of work in African-American rural garden space. Saying all this to say, in one of the books that she wrote, she talked about the difference between a landscaper, so somebody who stages and creates and maintains spaces, versus a land keeper, mm-hmm. like a real keeper of the land. And so I believe that when it comes to people in a vernacular garden space or the home garden space who absolutely have been not studied enough, and I don't even think celebrated enough, they are the land keepers. And I spent the majority of my career as a landscaper. Fortunately, I was born into land keepers. So I deeply understand the difference. There is no right or wrong in that space. I'm just saying that land keepers is something that you're drawn into through your family and your friends. Mm-hmm. I think landscaping is, for me, is what helped me to build a career and establish myself. But land keepers are the types of stories I tell and the types of people I meet. And I would say the people around me in the professional space, because I'm on the ornamental side, are definitely the stagers of beautiful vistas, which are the landscapers. And I hope that made sense the way I told mm-hmm. that.
I think it did perfectly. And that's a really interesting distinction between those two groups. Not that you couldn't be both.
Yeah.
But it's coming at it from two different angles. So before we wrap up our talk, I know one of the things that got canceled, unfortunately, due to the COVID crisis, is a Smithsonian program, horticultural program, that you were coming to DC to give and speak. Mm-hmm. I think that the overall theme was women in horticulture. Can you tell us a little bit about what that program would have been?
Yes. So the program was going to talk about women in horticulture. So people like Jennifer Jewell, who just released her book. I'm so sorry. There's so much on my mind. I can't call the name right now. It's she's Cultivating Places, her podcast. Mm-hmm. But it's a book of women in horticulture. And these are not women. These are women you could still give their flowers to. They're alive. They're well. They're kicking, right? The people that I generally talk about didn't get their flowers while they were here. So I love to talk about them now. So it was going to be a program with myself, Jennifer, and one other person. And for my part, I was, as we just talked about the DC flower vendor story, I was going to talk about those type of stories. So Black women, historical figures. So another post I recently did, because I was not unfortunately able to speak, and understandably at the Smithsonian, was on Mahalia Jackson, the famed gospel singer. And she had a flower shop. And she was a very smart businesswoman. And one of the things was her flower shop was so successful, not because she was the world's best florist. It was because people would come in there and buy flowers for their funerals, and Mahalia Jackson would promise to sing at the funeral. And I was thinking, this is amazing. Like, Kathy, I would die. I would be on the other side of heaven right now if I walked into a flower shop and Mahalia Jackson was there in an apron.
Exactly.
You know, clipping roses.
Like, yeah, that is life. That is wonderful marketing. I was like, what a great marketing technique for flowers.
Exactly. So I have some real gems to share, and it's okay because I'll share them in another time mm-hmm. and space, because we all need it to be safe. But that's what the program was really going to be about, highlighting women and their stories that need to be told, and we really need to support each other. And there's just so much out there, and there's just so much work for all of us to do. So we look forward to that in the future. I'm sure they're going to reschedule and we'll get to hang out again.
Yeah. I'm disappointed that we missed it this year, but I know we'll come back together in the future and have even more stories to share at that point. So
yes.
That'll be great. So thank you so much, Abra, for joining me for this episode. Let's tell our listeners again how they can contact you.
Okay, sure. Well, thank you for having me. I had so much fun. And you can follow me at Conquer the Soil, ConquerTheSoil, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And no underscores there, just Conquer the Soil. And also ConquerTheSoil.com, my webpage, which doesn't necessarily reflect the work I do, but it's a great way to get in touch with me, because I need to post more, y'all. So, you know, charge it to my head, not to my heart.
Exactly. We're just all so busy that a lot of it doesn't actually get onto the web or onto the page, but we're out there in the garden. We're growing.
We are. So yeah, though I'm failing the world on my webpage because of my own, you know, laziness, I will keep up on social media. So I'm available and I love talking to people.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a great day. Okay.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Garden DC. You can become a listener supporter by going to anchor.fm/Kathy-Gents/support. For as little as 99 cents a month, you can become a listener supporter and we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. Another way to support Garden DC is to go to washingtongardener.com and subscribe to Washington Gardener Magazine. Plant profile, pussy willows. The American pussy willow, Salix discolor, is a harbinger of spring. It makes a great decoration indoors or stuck in amongst other early spring flowers in a container. Yes, I said other flowers, as the fluffy catkin is actually the flowering part of this plant. Like its willow relatives, the pussy willow sends out deep tap roots and prefers a wet soil location. It also likes full sun and some room, as it can get up to 20 feet high and 12 feet wide. Pruning is advisable to control the size and shape of the pussy willow, which can be trained into either a tree or shrub form. You will want to prune it by taking cuttings for display indoors. Cut them before the yellow pollen appears and do not put them in water. They will dry and stay nice for several years. To propagate and pass along new pussy willow plants to others, just cut a branch in spring and stick it cut in down into a pot of soil. It will quickly take root and can then be planted outside. Another benefit to this native shrub is that it is the host plant of two native butterflies, the morning cloak and the viceroy, whose caterpillars sustain themselves on pussy willow foliage. There are also non-native pussy willows that have been cultivated to produce a range of different catkin colors, from the Japanese pink pussy willow, Mount Aso, to the sleek black pussy willow, Melanstachos. Try planting a pussy willow in your garden today. You can grow that. In the Garden this week is a new segment we're adding to the Garden DC podcast to let you know what we're harvesting at our community garden plot and at our home garden. We're located on the Washington, D.C. Maryland border in Zone 7. This week at the community garden plot, we harvested spinach, kale, and broccoli. Coming up nicely are our strawberry plants, garlic, and lots of little spinach seedlings, as well as radish and beets. We can't wait to let you know when those are ready. At the home garden in bloom right now, we have Maiden's Blush Lilac, the end of the Forsythia, and several types of bulbs blooming, from Grape Muscari to daffodils to the beginning of the early tulips. Let us know what's blooming in your garden and what you're harvesting. You can leave us a message at anchor.fm/Kathy-Gents/messages. You can also contact us via social media. Happy gardening! You can find Washington Gardener online at washingtongardener.com, on Twitter at WDCGardener, on Instagram at WDCGardener, and on Facebook.com at Washington Gardener Magazine.